We are continuing.
Thank you.
Continuing our presentations on the Bible correspondence course, we're in lesson number 9, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and part 3 of that lesson. Our intent is to help those who either cannot read or have difficulty reading by presenting the questions of our questionnaire and answering some of the questions, but broadening an understanding of what our foundational beliefs are, as well as deepening them. So we picked this up in question number 7 of lesson number 9, which asks, are we to make offerings today during the Feast of Unleavened Bread? And let's take a look at Exodus chapter 34, verses 19 and 20, which reads, all that open the womb are mine, and every male firstborn among your livestock, whether ox or sheep. But the firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb, and if you will not redeem him, then you shall break his neck. All the firstborn of your sons you shall redeem, and none shall appear before me empty-handed. In Leviticus 23, verses 4 through 8, we also read, these are the feasts of Yahweh, holy convocations, which means gatherings, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight, which means as the sun has set and the darkness has not yet appeared. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is Yahweh's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to Yahweh. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. But you shall offer an offering made by fire to Yahweh for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So yes, the answer is we are to make offerings on such holy convocations. Burnt offerings and physical blood sacrifices were offered in ancient times as commanded by Yahweh. Today, we too provide offerings of our hearts and minds in prayer, in songs of praise, and from our monetary increase to provide for the work of the body of Messiah. Question number 8 asks, when the Apostle Paul writes, let us keep the feast, is he promoting Pharisaical doctrine? Because he says he is of Pharisaical teaching. But is he promoting Pharisaical doctrine, which he describes as malignant and wicked? Or is he promoting pure doctrine based on Scripture? In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 8, he writes, therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now, as we discussed last time, this is the literal meaning, but the words are not necessarily to be taken literally, because we're not leavened bread, you know, we're human beings. So we might read that verse as, therefore let us keep the feast of unleavened bread, not with worn out false doctrine, nor with a false doctrine of malignancy and depravity, but with the purity of clear genuineness and mindful honesty. These are the figurative meanings of the translations that we typically read. So we're not to bring false doctrine, because false doctrine, contrary to Yahweh, it would be malignant. And we also read about, you know, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. So in Matthew 23, verse 23, we read, woe to you, and this is Yahshua speaking, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. So a lot of people take a spiritual meaning to the scripture and don't believe that we should be doing the things that are written in the law. But we are, and we learn of spiritual things by doing the physical. The weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. Justice is the Greek word krisis. Krisis. And so I might ask, is that where we get the word crisis? Crisis? Yeah. You know, if we're on trial, that might be a crisis. Justice is a decision defined as a tribunal or a hearing. And especially, it applies to Yahweh's law as part of an accusation, a condemnation, or a damnation. And the first use of the word justice in Scripture, we might take a look at that, is found in Genesis 18, 16 through 19. Actually, we're going to read down to verse 26. But then the man rose from there and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with him to send them on the way. And Yahweh said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of Yahweh to do righteousness and justice, that Yahweh may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him." In verses 20 and 21. And Yahweh said, "Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me, and if not, I will know." Then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, but Abraham still stood before Yahweh. And Abraham came near and said, "Would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there were 50 righteous within the city, would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" What a close relationship they had, huh? In verse 26, "So Yahweh said, 'If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes.'" Of course, we know what happens from there. Abraham bargains with Yahweh down to 10. If there were 10 righteous men, then Yahweh says he will not destroy it. So we know that there were not 10 righteous in that city. Mercy, the second of the three that we were talking about, is the Greek word here, eleos, which means compassion, whether we're speaking from a human being or from Yahweh, but especially active. In other words, people might think of having mercy, but if we don't act mercifully, then it really doesn't apply as mercy. In Genesis 39, verses 19 to 23, we read about this. "So it was when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, 'Your servant did to me after this manner,' that his anger was aroused." We're talking about Joseph, right, in Egypt, being accused of molesting the master's wife there. "Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. But Yahweh was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because Yahweh was with him. And whatever he did, Yahweh made it prosper." Mercy implies that we do something with that mercy. Faith is the Greek word pistis, and it means persuasion, that is, credence, which is the moral conviction of spiritual truth, the truthfulness of Yahweh, or a teacher of truth, especially reliance upon Messiah for salvation, and abstractly, constancy in such profession of faith. By extension, the system of spiritual truth itself. Which, what system would that be from our perspective? Be obedience to the law of Yahweh. That's the system of spiritual truth. In the King James Version, pistis is translated assurance, belief, believe, faith, and fidelity. In the book of Habakkuk, in chapter 2, verses 2 through 4, let's read about faith. Then Yahweh answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets that he may run who reads it. Now, not run away, but run with it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, and that word there, appointed time, is moed, a feast day. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, a feast day, but at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just. And that word just there is the word tzaddik, which means righteous or lawful. But the lawful shall live by his faith. Luke 12, verse 1. In the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, this is the first thing came out of his mouth, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. So he's warning people not to be hypocrites. And in Greek, the word hypocrite is an actor, but it means insincerity, duplicity, having double standards or a pretense of truth. Now, when I read that, I have this vision in my mind of what actors use as a symbol. It's two heads faced, you know, in opposite ways. That's also a picture of one of the Janus, I think it is, who has two faces. Literally, hypocrite means actor. And taken to its extreme, hypocrisy is a violation of the ninth commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Yahshua points out that one's neighbor is he who shows mercy upon victims of circumstance or to victims of wicked people. A hypocrite is essentially a liar who teaches but does not adhere to the following commandment, Leviticus 19, verse 18. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am Yahweh. So, faith means not being a hypocrite. It means having mercy upon those who are victims of circumstances, circumstances over which they have no control, victims of crimes. People who need help. We are to demonstrate our faith and our mercy upon our neighbors. We learn spiritual lessons through physical actions and through life's trials. We have come to understand that a spirit of humility is a necessary quality before true justice, mercy, and faithfulness can be performed. And this was something many of the Pharisees and scribes, teachers of the law, lacked. Matthew 5, verse 20. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. And in Matthew 18, verses 1 through 5. At that time, the disciples came to Yahshua, saying, Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Then Yahshua called a little child to him, set him in the midst of them, and said, Assuredly, I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. Truly, humility and love are the basis of faith. Question number 9 in our Bible study. Is wine, though fermented, permitted to partake of during the days of unleavened bread, as long as one is of legal age according to the laws of the land? In Numbers 28, verse 24, we find part of the answer. In this manner you shall offer the food of the offering made by fire daily for 7 days, as a sweet aroma to Yahweh. It shall be offered besides the regular burnt offering and its drink offering. In Romans chapter 13, verses 1 and 2, we read, Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from Yahweh, and the authorities that exist are appointed by Yahweh. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of Yahweh, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. Fermented products, or even the use of a beaten egg white in cooking, does not violate the prohibition against leavening during the feast. Leavening includes yeast and other products, such as potassium bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, and baking powder. Items such as brewer's yeast used in beer and sometimes wine is actually a non-leavening agent. Now, these questions are in response to people who have inquired over and over about what constitutes a leavening agent. Question number 10, is the Feast of Unleavened Bread the only sojourning feast? Exodus 23, verses 14 through 17. Three times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. You shall keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded you at the time appointed in the month of Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt. None shall appear before me empty. Verse 16, and the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labors, which you have sown in the field. And that would be the summer harvest. And the feast of ingathering at the end of the year, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. Three times in the year all your males shall appear before the sovereign Yahweh. Deuteronomy 16, verses 16 and 17. Three times a year all your males shall appear before Yahweh, your Elohim, in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before Yahweh empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yahweh your Elohim, which he has given you. So there are three feasts, not just the Feast of Unleavened Bread and not just the Feast of Tabernacles. The question has come up at times about whether or not the Day of Trumpets and the Day of Atonement are sojourning feasts. And we say, no, they're not. Because Yahweh has said the feasts include the Feast of Ingathering. It doesn't mention the Day of Trumpets or the Day of Atonement. And finally, when preparing to travel to these feasts, we must understand that as the holy convocation of the eighth day, often referred to as the last great day, is connected to the seven-day Feast of Tabernacles, the day of Passover is connected to the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It is therefore appropriate to plan for an 8-day sojourn at the spring and at the autumnal appointed times. May Yahweh continue to bless us as we remain faithful to his ways, and may we keep his feasts in a righteous manner, that in the day of judgment,